But it goes into the chorus, which is pentatonic. Now, this is where you have to stop me and tell me I'm overthinking things.
I think you're overthinking
things. No, no. Not yet.
Okay,
not yet.
Not yet. Okay, cool.
No.
What are we doing? Okay, podcast.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole, and this is Nevermind the Music.
What's your experience with Miley Cyrus, Nicole?
I have no personal experience. Like, I've never met Miley Cyrus, but...
You don't hang out?
No, we don't hang out yet. I'd like to. I think she's cool. I think she has poppy songs, and she's really reinvented herself a bunch, and I support that.
Were you aware of her in the Hannah Montana era?
No, I'm a little bit too old for Hannah Montana. I know about the general trope of Hannah Montana, that she was like a normal girl and then she put a wig on and then she was a pop star.
Wait, is that actually the conceit of the show? I'm also too old for Hannah Montana.
No, that's pretty much what
I'm not sure I would have been the prime demographic either way.
I don't think so. You're more of like a Hey Dude type of guy.
Hey Dude. Yeah, absolutely. Hey Dude. I love
so
Hey Dude.
Do you... Like Brad and Melody and Danny.
Okay,
so
I don't remember anything more about it except for
so
the
good.
Concept.
Okay, go on.
Okay, anyways, I kind of lumped her in with T-Swift in the early days, honestly.
Like, a lot of people did, you know, and still do, I think. They wanted to put like a feud between the two of them because they were like country artists that like turned to pop artists. They're around the same age. And the music industry has a way of not allowing two women to exist in the same space that they have to like be fighting.
They have to fight for that same space.
Yes.
Yeah, obviously, neither of those artists are the sort of teen pop fly-by-night artists that I assumed they were when I was a 20-something, you know, when they came out. So
Sure. That
does not say anything negative about either of them now. That says something about what I perceived them both to be back then.
Yeah, they definitely have like a distinct, like branded identity of being like a young ingenue trying to break it in the music business.
So I wanted to talk about Miley Cyrus's tune, Party in the USA. Did you know this one back when it came out?
I didn't know it back when it came out. I was too cool to listen to Miley Cyrus at that point in my life. But now I listen to it quite a bit. It's one of my like pump up songs.
What were you listening to back when this came out?
What year was this?
2009.
I was listening to like 2009. I was listening to like singer songwriter hippie bands. So like Tea Leaf Green or like Brett Denon.
Okay.
Right? You wouldn't know them.
So different from this.
Very different. And this was like, no way am I listening to this like pop Right. Princess Hannah Montana. Give me a break. But now it like...
This is a banger.
It's a banger. Also, the name of one of her albums, Bangers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
So my first exposure to this song was actually... Because 2009 is sort of the bottom of my radio pop. I was about to emerge from the cocoon as a butterfly who was once again... willing to listen to top 40 pop after sort of acting too cool about it before
that's
that.
That's where I was at in this moment too. Yeah.
So imagine that, except you're also in grad school trying to be a professional musician. It's on steroids, right? So this was my first exposure to this song in 2011. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide
pills, my classified dossier. You're such a nerd, Mark. Like shredding the files like you. I memorized all the enemies. I've never heard that before. It's obviously the iconic Weird Al Yankovic.
That's right. 2011, Alpocalypse, that record.
Alpocalypse, a classic, instant classic. I've never heard that before, but I appreciate it.
The thing is, it's funny. Party in the CIA, that is. But I'm also listening to it going, what is this song? This song's awesome. And then only then did I go back and, you know, that was a little while ago when that came out. But only then did I go back and figure out how cool this tune was. And big shout out to the Weird Algorithm podcast. Those guys, Matt and Matthew, have a killer podcast that goes episode by episode, song by song of every album he's ever recorded. Check it out. Also, Weird Al, this might be the only time that Weird Al did a father-child set of parodies because he also parodied...
Billy Ray Cyrus, Achy Breaky Heart.
That's right.
What was the Weird Al parody?
Achy Breaky song. Not quite.
Not
he's
great.
Basically, he's hating on Achy Breaky Heart, the song, saying it's annoying, which is Usually Al, I love Weird Al, but usually when he's being mean, he's not at his best.
Yeah, he doesn't really like provide editorial a lot.
Well, I mean, Party in the CIA is editorial about
torture, like the human
stuff.
That's like writing.
That's
the
right.
Songs.
Yeah, it's a little
cheap shot. Do you have a
shot.
Clip of that? I do love Billy Ray Cyrus.
Really?
I liked the song when it came out because then I was maybe in like elementary school and it was I was still allowed to like listen to top 40 music and be cool. I hadn't like hit my teenage angst yet. And I just thought he was cool with the mullet and everything. And then like when Miley came up and like Dolly Parton's her godmother and everything. And I was like, yeah. Wow, this is like, what a family.
I have to say whatever preteen or whatever I was when that song came out, I was primed to be receptive to a song that was making fun of that song.
Sure.
I'm sure that if I check that song out again and Billy Ray in general, I would probably find a lot to dig. But the youthful version of myself found that song super annoying. Here's Weird Al.
And if you play that song, that nauseating song, it might just make me lose my lunch.
I remember this.
Weird Al always got to go to the fart, the hand farts,
yeah,
the manualist. And the burping. Anyways.
Lost me at the hand farts.
So obviously, yeah, her dad being a famous country rock artist is notable, but this song strays relatively far from that style. This is from her EP, The Time of Our Lives, from, once again, 2009. This was her biggest hit at that point, hit number 2.
Okay.
Of course, Wrecking Ball, you know, that's a couple of years later, and then Flowers just... in 2023, blew up. Those both hit number 1. Just to make sure we give credit where credit's due, the song was not written by Miley Cyrus. It was written by Dr. Luke, who you've probably heard some of his songs, Who Knew by Pink, I Kissed a Girl, Katy Perry.
Oh, sure.
Lots of hits. And also Claude Kelly. And then Jessie J. I don't know if you know the singer-songwriter Jessie J.
I know, like, the name Jessie J. Like, that sounds familiar, but I couldn't, like, identify her in a lineup.
So maybe we'll come back to this later in our conversation, but she actually wrote this for herself about her move from the UK to LA.
Oh.
And then so this whole sort of Nashville to LA move thing was sort of superimposed by Miley on top of it. And you know, Miley claims she's never heard Jay-Z at the time when she recorded this song, even though she literally talks about Jay-Z.
I find that so, how can you never?
I think it's impossible. Like, I could see that maybe Jay-Z wouldn't have been her favorite or whatever,
sure.
But how could she have not heard?
I mean, she was young.
She was young. She was, late teen there.
But, I guess. It's hard for me to believe because Jay-Z's obviously so iconic. Like,
right,
how do you not know?
And Britney, I'm sure she's heard
Britney.
Well,
yeah, I think that she modeled herself in the Hannah Montana moment. After Britney a lot.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
Superstar
vibe. Years later version.
Yeah.
Now, you might think the things that I want to talk about are, for example, the super sweet guitar riff.
It's so great. So staccato.
Good word. It
Thanks.
Is definitely staccato. Or the super infectious little synth lick.
Also great.
Yeah. But no, I want to talk about scales.
That sounds so much more interesting.
It does not sound so much more interesting, but the different kinds of scales Miley and the songwriters use in this song really serve to sort of make, in particular, the hook and the chorus stand out as singable, anthemic, super catchy, while the storytelling of the verse can be a little bit more immediate, a little more personal. So this song is in the key of F sharp major, and it sticks to it. This is a song that does not have a bunch of fancy chords outside of the key. It's very simple.
Remember, also known as E flat.
Also absolutely not known as E flat.
Oh, man.
F sharp. Okay, listeners, F sharp means higher than F, right? So the next note after F is G.
So G.
So the note
G
that would
flat.
Be G but lower is G flat. So
is
F sharp,
G flat?
F sharp and G flat are the same pitch. They are the same. That's just two different names for the same thing. My name is Mark. My name is also Dad. Different context. One makes more sense than others. Nicole,
right.
I would respectfully request that you call me Mark, not Dan.
Thank you. Yeah.
Not Dad, for
weird.
Example. So, okay. So this is an F sharp major, which we've talked about key before on this podcast, but it's a collection of notes that orbits a particular note, right? So it's a set of notes, and the most important of those notes is F sharp.
like that.
Yeah, that is what we call a major scale. Its name is F sharp major scale. And we heard at the end an F sharp chord, just to sort of drill down, ba-boom, this is the key we're in. Part of what makes major scales like what I just played for you so effective is that they have a mix of steps and half steps. We may have talked about this on previous podcasts, but the smallest distance on a piano, for example, one key to the next, is called a half step. When you put two of them together, you get a whole step. A major scale has some whole steps and some half steps. Take a listen again. So between the third and the fourth note, and the second to last note and the last note, is a half step, but all the other ones are whole steps. We don't need to know the specifics, but just trust me, two kinds of notes in that scale.
Sure. It seems pretty basic. I get it.
We call these scales diatonic, two types of tones, di, two, tonic. So yeah, seems pretty basic. Music theory 101, right?
Sure.
Well, let's listen to the verse in Party in the USA.
Get to the club in my taxi cab. Everybody's looking at me now. Like, who's that chick that's rocking kicks? She gotta be from out of town.
Any thoughts on the scale you're hearing?
My guess is it's an F sharp scale.
It's an F sharp major scale.
Yes.
We've got five notes taken. It's notes number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from F sharp scale. Take a listen. Glorious sampled piano for you.
I love it. It's so cute when it's on the piano.
So cute. Yeah.
So cute.
Okay. So we've got stuff just taken from the major scale, the first five notes in it. Now let's listen to a few bars later in that same verse.
So hard with my girls not around me. It's definitely not a Nashville party.
Still major, but she's like reaching up a little bit, but it's still like there's tension. Like it hasn't resolved.
Good.
Like she's just like reaching for it.
Totally right. We've added a new note from the major scale. This is note number 7. Can you tell how much more emotionally expressive my keyboard playing is than the actual song?
And no, it's lovely. Like, why weren't you Hannah Montana/ Miley Cyrus? Like, you had so much potential.
But not singing, just literally playing my digital piano. So yeah, we've got 6 of the 7 notes so far in this song. We're about to add the other one in a minute anyways. But yeah, there's a little bit of tension there because that definitely not a Nashville party, that's a half step away, right? So that half step, that tiny distance creates a little bit of crunch. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool?
Super cool.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
Come, baby, come, baby.
This is pretty typical major. Nothing fancy here. This is going to be a lot of pop songs out there.
Sure.
A lot of not pop songs out there even. Let's listen to what happens at the end of the verse, though.
It's when the DJ dropped my favorite tune, and the Britney song was on. And the Britney song was on. And the Britney song was on.
Pretty cool part.
It is. It's like the best part of the whole song.
Probably the best part of the whole song. Part of that is the way she's belting, right? That's called belting, that high.
Yeah.
Not quite screaming, but high chest voice. She's sounds really good. The melody fits the lyrics really well. It's a simple melody, but she does a little cool, playful stuff. This shifts our scale just a little bit. Still sounds pretty major, right?
It sounds pretty major. It's unexpected, too. Like, there's something unexpected about it.
Okay.
For me.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
So we're using notes from major, but we're only using a subset of them. The five sort of simplest notes in the major scale, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, we're cutting 4,
mm-hmm.
we're cutting seven. Four and seven are where you get the tension in the sure. melody. And so we're getting tension from her belting, but we're using a small subset of the full major scale. And what we call this is a major pentatonic scale.
Oh.
Pentatonic. Do some lexicography.
It's pretty five.
Yeah, five. Yeah. We got five tones.
Yeah. Just like the pentatonics. The acapella.
Pentatonics, everybody. Pentatonics. Got their name from this
scale. There's
five
of them.
There's five of them. And imagine that. So it's almost like they've heard this word before.
Pentagon, so, pentagram.
That's right. Penta everything. So a pentatonic scale, specifically the major pentatonic, sounds like this.
I love it. I love that.
It's really easy to listen to.
Yeah.
What's missing? We're missing notes four and note seven.
Ooh.
What's the deal with those two?
They sound like very dissonant to me. Like they sound like minor E or like darker. When you take them out, it's just like you're left with only the bright notes.
Those are our half steps.
Half steps.
The half steps are between three and four, which you're about to hear, and then seven and one or eight.
Mm.
And those half steps give our major scale a lot of its weight and energy, but also they're a little tense, right?
Yeah.
And this pentatonic collection of notes, the major pentatonic specifically, has basically no tension. Now, I should say, pentatonic just means five notes, right? So you could have five-note scale that does have half steps, that does have crunchy tension, mm-hmm. but the major and minor pentatonics have just whole steps and even larger intervals than that. Nothing super crunchy. And it kind of makes everything you play sound good. Specifically F-sharp pentatonic, or 5 minutes ago, G-flat pentatonic.
Yes, yes.
Is all the black keys on the piano and only the black keys. So you, if you're a mediocre keyboardist like me, can go to the piano and just jam on a bunch of black keys and mm-hmm. everything will sound good no matter what because there's no tension. Not good, but kind of good. I call this piece pentatonic BS.
Okay. Sounds very like Gershwin to me.
Gershwin or Debussy, like super washed. Now, that was me messing around at the keyboard for 15 seconds, but you can tell that the notes fit together in a way that feels very easy, even though that musically, melodically is junk, what I just played.
I loved it.
Thank you.
Believe in yourself, Mark.
I'm a professional, Nicole. I still need the attaboys periodically. Okay, so what are we talking about here? The end of that verse goes into what we would call pentatonicism, a pentatonic scale. It's when the DJ drum my favorite tune, and the Britney song was on, and the Britney song was on, and the Britney song was on. So that moment is so memorable, and part of what makes it memorable is she's saying Britney, she's referring to an artist you know. Earlier in the song, she talks about Jay-Z, which we know, but maybe she didn't know at the time. But also that scale is so singable, so easy to listen to, so without tension that it can just float in your ear. And this is why the pentatonic scale, specifically these types of pentatonic scales that don't have any half steps, have been around for hundreds of years and exist in so many cultures all across the world. So I'm going to give you just a few examples. I had to stop eventually. I mean, I was thinking, okay, maybe I can do every continent, you know, most of them at least. Sorry, Antarctica, you're not cool enough. But I had to stop just with three. Let's listen first to Wasimasiai. This is in the Huano style of Andean music from South America. This is Los Bohemios del Cusco.
Okay.
This is an example of minor pentatonic, which is the same kind of thing, just starting on a different note. All right, going across the ocean. This is George White's favorite. This is an Irish traditional reel, which means like a short tune. This is performed by Matt Malloy and Sean Keane.
Mm-hmm.
One more. This is Eki Bobo by the Ugandan folk artist Giovanni Kiyingi. He's playing the kalimba, which some versions of the kalimba, you know the kalimba, the thumb piano?
Yeah.
Some versions of, I just did the thumb piano move, everybody.
Yeah. I did too.
Some versions of this instrument only let you play pentatonic scales anyways.
So that's why when you play the kalimba, you always sound good.
Everything sounds good. If
Everything
it's got pentatonic
great.
Scales.
Yeah.
True with like panpipes sometimes. There's different versions of these instruments. But a lot of times, certain folk instruments in particular sometimes can only play pentatonic scales. When I was in college, I played in a Javanese style gamelan. Do you know gamelan?
No.
Basically, you would sit. It's a type of ceremonial and sort of classical music from Java and Bali and places Indonesia. And you play these metallophones, like not xylophones, but like metal versions of them. And some of them only play like five notes. And you're just chilling for like 45 minutes playing this really slow music. And just it's this wash of sound. Everything sounds good. But it all also sort of is sitting where it is. It doesn't move, right? Because we don't have tension. At least those instruments didn't.
And you got college credit for that.
I got college credit for it. And I told all my friends and everybody joined it. But, you know, you're a music major. You got to have your ensembles. What am I going to do? An act like the choir, the orchestra?
Lame.
Something. I know I did the African drumming ensemble. I did the, I guess I was a regional tourist. I did the gamelan. I don't know. Composers, I guess I just wanted to check other things out. Anyways. Okay. So, point being.
Sure.
Pentatonic scales, and we're going to hear more in this song in a minute. But they're universal. There's something immediately singable about them. Nursery rhymes are often in pentatonic scales. Na 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 na.
Oh.
Those kind of things, those kinds of childish chants, often pentatonic. Easy to remember, easy to sing, something very human about them, right?
Yeah.
And when we get to this climactic chorus, we're going to see that used to great effect.
When you're talking about how the scale is reflected in so many other cultures, it's really, when I hear this song Party in the USA, it's about, that's what this song is about, is that like we're kind of shifting from one culture to the other. So it's really cool that she's using this convention of a pentatonic major scale in this song. It's probably not intentional. She didn't even write the song, but like it addresses this issue of like cultural relativism and like identity development throughout the lifespan, which I think is really, really cool. Do you know what cultural relativism is?
First of all, I would say songwriters definitely conscious of the use of the different kinds of scales in this.
Well, okay.
Miley maybe not, but it's just so common, and we'll get there, but it's so common in pop songs.
Sure.
So cultural relativism, I almost think of it as not a double standard, but like almost you judge things all relative to your culture, maybe?
Yeah.
Cultural relativism could lead you to misjudge some situations because you don't understand kind of the real context. But please let me know. I don't know.
I think that you're like on a really good track here when you identify your definition of this. Like it really is using your culture as the default culture, assuming that everyone is the same as you. Or has to adapt to your baseline culture.
Sure.
And that's something I think Americans do quite a bit, to be honest. And Miley's talking about her culture in Nashville versus when she moves to LA and how there's different approaches to environments depending on what her cultural grounding is and how she doesn't really fit in and she starts to find herself. And she finds like connection between certain iconographic things. So things like Britney Spears or Jay-Z. Or even being in the club, she can relate that to back to her home culture, which would be Nashville in this song. And how like she grows, her identity grows and develops. We see that through Miley throughout her whole career, that she tries on different versions of herself. And this moment in her career, when she didn't write this song, but at this moment in her career, she's starting to shift away from the Hannah Montana, away from that like pop princess, and trying to reinvent herself in maybe a more edgy way. But I'm not sure her label would let her do that right now. So she has to kind of stick to this like pop princess vibe.
Sure.
So you're seeing like this identity dissonance within her, which is really interesting and really cool. And she breaks through it literally in Wrecking Ball. It's a very strong metaphor that she's using a wrecking ball to like kind of break down her preconceived cultural biases or the biases people have on her.
Well, and I remember that era. I'm not sure if it's more the Wrecking Ball era or as early as this one, but so much of the media discourse about Miley Cyrus was not about music at all, which big surprise for women in pop music, yeah. But about what is she wearing at this awards show? Oh my God, she's twerking on stage, all these things. Isn't she still so young? And like sort of that transition seems like it would have been tough. It's got to be so unique, that transition. And she's one of the few people that transitioned from teen star to fully functional 30-something making music now, sure. 20 years later. So.
And like, it's a tough story. We see a lot of people don't react well to that transition. I mean, people in her cohort, Demi Lovato, Justin Bieber. I mean, we can all think of them in the same cohort that they started out. I mean, Bieber wasn't really like a Disney person, but came up through that same era. And sure. A lot of them were not okay. Like Demi Lovato was not okay for a really long time. Justin Bieber still might not be okay, right?
You're talking like psychologically mental health
and like sure. Very open about their struggles. I mean, Lovato was very open with her struggles of eating disorder and addiction, really, really intense addiction to a lot of different, like really some dark moments in her life. And I think Miley's had those moments of darkness too. And we just are very voyeuristic in watching them all play out. And like, we're eager for them to mess up. We're like eager to throw stones at these folks. And it must be really hard to be 17 years old, moving from Nashville to LA to like break it in the music industry and reinvent yourself. Developmentally, your brain isn't available for that type of change. Like developmentally at 17, like you really need strong peer groups, a really solid home base, like really strong foundation. And I know we can like blast Billy Ray Cyrus for his achy breaky heart vibe, but he seemed like he was a good ambassador for Miley into the music industry and maybe helped ground her, and her family helped ground her, because so many people like didn't have that grounding. Like, you know, you talk about Britney Spears, Justin Bieber, Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez,
sure,
like all those folks.
And I don't know much about Billy Ray Cyrus, but from what I do know, despite, you know, my preteen self not liking that song, he was wronged in a lot of ways by the music industry. Yeah. Like he struggled to really get his due. And I think that made him probably a better mentor for his daughter, who was about to go through that same typecasting, that same pigeonholing that would have happened to her as a teen star.
Yeah.
Right.
Things happened to him that informed how he raised his daughter in this industry.
Right.
And a lot of the people in Miley's, you know, generational cohort, maybe had parents that weren't as child forward as Billy Ray was with Miley, that were more like career forward.
Sure.
And it's really problematic when you put children in adult positions and say like, you're the moneymaker for our family, or you have to succeed because we can't pay our mortgage if you don't. And I don't think Miley was in that position, and that allowed her room for creative growth. And that seems healthy for her.
Okay, so bringing it back to this song, so this idea of cultural relativism, like, can you speak to that moment of, she's describing this feeling out of place and feeling like you're culturally completely disjointed, but yet you're unified by this music. This song is fundamentally an ode to music you love, right?
Yeah.
It's about moving, and the whether it's Nashville, LA, or originally as Jessie J wrote it, the UK to LA, but it doesn't matter because that song comes on.
Yeah, and it like roots you back to your individual identity, because you can remember listening to this song at home and listening to it here, and you can close your eyes and still be in that same headspace, which is awesome.
Is it the individual identity, but it's also the, like, I get the sense from this that everybody's dancing to the Jay-Z song, everybody's vibing to the Britney song, that there's a universality also to that, the comfort zone of this song, meaning that she's describing listening to this song, the DJ spins, that suddenly she feels at peace. But is it the individual piece, or is it the group, and suddenly we're all the same kind of?
Yeah, I think it can be both. It's the reality that, like, I love this song and I'm with people that don't look like me and don't talk like me or act like me or feel like me, but we're all vibing to this one song. And that's just lovely. That's just the lovely thing about music, is that we can connect to it despite gender, class, ethnicity, that we're all more alike than we're different. Like, no matter where you are in the world, you hear someone, what is it, a major pentatonic fifth? Right?
Major pentatonic scale.
Pentatonic scale word. And, like, you feel at home.
Yeah. I mean,
you feel at home.
Can you think of an effective way to convey that musically in a hook to a pop song?
I have a feeling you're about to play it for me.
It might be hard to recognize, but this is a pentatonic collection of notes. It's just a small group of notes, no tension from half steps allowed. And this is part of what makes this chorus so anthemic, I would say, so catchy, so easy to sing, despite the high belting she's pulling off somehow. And this is really common in pop songs, especially the choruses of pop songs. Shall I prove it?
Prove it.
All right, here's some tunes, all from approximately the same era, plus or minus a little bit, as Party in the USA. This is Roar by Katy Perry.
Not my favorite.
Really?
Not my favorite.
But it is
catchy.
I
appreciate it. It's super catchy. Like, I've had like very feminist moments in my car. Like, I am going to roar. I can do it.
Just the pentatonicism in there. So this entire song, the melody is pentatonic, not just the chorus. But if you think of the other parts of the song, help me down, da 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 da, da ready, da 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 da. I don't know the words. All of that is super catchy too, right?
Yeah, it
is. The whole thing is pentatonic. All right.
What?
That song, by the way, 2013, a few years earlier, Raise Your Glass, 2010 by Pink.
Is every song that's ever pumped me up written in this motif? Is this every song?
So sometimes I deep dive to find my musical examples.
Sure.
I'm like combing through the proverbial record collection.
No, you phoned it in
here. This was seriously, I went, what pop songs from the last decade or so are really anthemic? And every single one that popped into my head with that quality in mind that sounded like, a sing-along party song, were pentatonic. Now, this one is like the Party in the USA in that the verse is regular old major, but the chorus section, like Party in the USA, is where it becomes pentatonic. And here's another one that uses the minor pentatonic, which is still very singable, but it has a bit of a darker tone. And this is The Hills by The Weeknd from 2015.
I've never heard that before.
You've never heard that?
No.
It's the same record as Can't Feel My Face and all that
sure.
era. I'm surprised by that. In any case, that's another tune where the entire vocal melody for the entire song is pentatonic, right? So it's not just about the hooks, but it's kind of like everything becomes a hook if you use really simple musical materials. Let's listen to the Miley hook one more time just to reorient. Sounds like one of those anthems, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, totally fits in. And part of the cool thing about this song is that moment at the end of the third verse where she's singing about Britney, when it transitions from regular major to a pentatonic scale. She's sort of building up energy as she pivots into, okay, sing song time. And that kind of thing, the opposite actually happens later in the song. So when we get to the bridge section, the part with all the ahs, easy, singable, pentatonic. That's the super emotional digital piano playing.
I love it.
But then at the end of the bridge, we get a little switch.
And the DJ plays my song and I feel all right.
we get the major back. So that note, when she's saying the DJ, that word on DJ is the B, which is the fourth note in the scale. And we get a little tension leading back to the chorus. And the cool part here is we have this transition almost like it's back to major.
Yeah.
But it goes into the chorus, which is pentatonic. Now, this is where you have to stop me and tell me I'm overthinking things.
I think you're overthinking
things. No, no. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool.
No. So we get this little, the DJ, da, 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 and ooh, it's major. It's tense. Back to pentatonic stuff, except we've got these ad-libs.
It's the best part of the song.
Those ad-libs she does mm-hmm. are regular old major.
Oh.
We don't sing along with the gonna be okay. We don't sing along with that. We're singing along with the pentatonic part, but Miley is working the notes that leave that pentatonic scale and give us full-on major, right? Which are a little more expressive, a little more harder to sing, so a little better for showing off. And so I hear this bridge as sort of transitioning us into this new super chorus that has all the ad-libs.
Yeah.
So, overthinking?
Yeah, but I'm going to argue because when I sing the song alone in my car, I do sing the ad-lib part because I'm like, I'm the star. Like, I am going to show off alone in my car.
Well, is that ad-lib part, being in major and not in pentatonic, is it more personal, less universal? This is me.
Yeah,
I am major. I am not in every culture in the world, just several cultures in the world. So this scale is somehow more individually bespoke to you in the car. I don't know.
I think so. And I think if we can make some connections here, maybe that's how Miley felt as well when she's rolling up in the club with her sneakers on and not her stiletto shoes. That she's like, you know, I can code switch into this world, but I'm still going to be me, like deep inside.
Yeah. But I feel really connected to the idea of like the listening to a song and it sort of pulls you out of your state into something better.
Same. And the idea that you can be with someone, like I'm thinking of a memory that I was next to someone that didn't speak English and we couldn't really communicate, but then like,
but once you were nodding your head like, yeah,
I was nodding my head like, yeah. And like kind of moving my hips like, yeah, too, if I'm being honest. No, but like one specific song came on and like we both knew that song and we just looked at each other and felt really connected to like this Pink Floyd song that was playing at the bar. And it was just a really lovely moment of humanity. Like music does connect us. And I think it's because of these theoretical constructs you're talking about, is that they're familiar to us even when our location is completely like jarring.
Right.
How many times do you think I said like in this episode? Probably a million.
I'll probably edit out 3/4 of them. So it might be a million, but the audience is only going to hear.
I'm very hyper aware of it. 250,000
times. Yeah. We haven't talked about this, but because I do the audio editing. So I listen to us over and over again, you know, cutting out the stuff that doesn't work or whatever. And I'm from SoCal. Nicole is not from SoCal. No. She's got me on the like path. She's got more of them than me.
So bad.
I need to step up my game.
I think about it so actively that it like ruins my flow because I'm like,
yeah.
I just did it again. I'm worried about you editing them out.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Okay, Nicole, the outro credits, except this time you're from Boston and I'm from SoCal. Nevermind the Music is like totally hosted by me, Mark Poppany, and Nicole Vatcher. I also totally produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
We're on social media. If you want to leave us a message, you can. We don't really care. We're at Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Once in a while, we'll check our email and do a mailbag episode for you. So please let us know if you have any questions. We'll try to answer them.
You're going to be all like, you can't get there if I'm here. Your mother's here. All right, Mark.
Thanks for listening.